WGNS, Murfreesboro.
This is FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, and WGNSradio.com. Rutherford County's place to talk.
This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good morning, Rutherford County. It's a little nippy outside, but all it'll do is just open your eyes a little bit and start your day off. It's actually maybe a little bit better than coffee, although Dr. Jim Jones and I are getting ready to sip on our first cup this morning. And it is going to be a special show because we're going to be talking about the Civil War, or the war between the states, as I like to call it. And we're going to be talking about it in a way that you normally don't look at it. And we want to let you know that Jim's show is brought to you by Murfreesboro Automotive. When you need car repairs, you want someone you can trust. Murfreesboro Automotive is that place. Chuck Haynes is a staff of certified technicians that can fix anything. From the simple oil change to major auto repair, Murfreesboro Automotive is the only place you need. Murfreesboro Automotive, turn off Broad between Chewy's and Chili's on the Ridgely Road. How you doing this morning, Jim?
I feel fine, a little cold, perhaps.
Yeah, you look good this morning.
Well, it's nice to hear, especially this early.
You know, it kind of throws us back a couple of hundred years, or 150 years, I should say. And when the war was going on down through here, I mean, during this particular time, I don't see how in the world anybody could survive going through all the trauma that they went to and the cold, and yeah. It really wasn't a healthy period.
Well, I was thinking of the same thing coming down to the station this morning. But how did they survive? How did the soldiers out there in the field, how warm could they stay?
You know, yeah.
And that kind of thing. You do wonder how it was. My purpose in writing this book, or at least gathering all these documents together, was to kind of give people an idea of, first of all, what a document is,
mm-hmm.
and second of all, what they mean. We all know that the great stories of the big battles and the generals who, quote, fought, unquote, the war.
Mm-hmm.
But we know little about the average Joe, if you will, or what happened in more peaceful situations, as in towns or in cities. What was life like in during the war in those kinds of situations? And I have a written or put these selected contemporary accounts,
mm-hmm.
of military and other events in a month-by-month kind of a arrangement.
Now, when we look at the war and most of the people that have studied the Civil War and that in this area, it's probably more important to us personally than it is a number of the other areas in the country, is that this was the battlefield down here. I mean, the people were disrupted, their homes were gone, families destroyed. It was, you and I were talking about this earlier,
yeah.
before we went on, people in the West and in the North and all these other places that were not directly affected by it, except for how the country changed,
right.
They don't understand why it's still paramount in our minds, because you know, once the war's over with, it's over with, and then you go on. But you look at the devastation that occurred down here, and then you realize that it's something that just doesn't go away.
Well, I suppose that's right, and if you excuse me for saying it, it's the burden for the defeat that you bear.
Mm-hmm.
It's stinging,
right?
And it's a difficult thing to forget.
Yes,
it's like those old license plates,
mm-hmm.
with the little rebel guy with his rebel flag that said, "Forget hell," you know.
Yeah, this is an area like that, isn't it?
Well, sort of, but it's understandable.
But you know, we look at it in a way that I guess, like England, we're saying earlier, like England,
yeah.
Like when Germany came in and invaded England, or kept bombing them through all the long nights and days. And
think about the Germans' burden of history,
right?
As well as it's not exactly the same thing, but it's a burden of history.
Yeah,
that they lost, and but they did such terrible things. Anyway. I think that what you say, though, is probably true. there's a burden of Southern history that is unlike the North of the West, and it has to do with the Civil War and all right. that came with it.
Right, and everybody has different ways of looking at it, but
right.
there's a lot of fallout from the war, not just yes. on the battlefield, but everything concerning the war. A lot of that is not written in the history books.
That's precisely right, and that. thanks for bringing that up.
That's, you're welcome.
That's precisely why I tried to write this book.
Yeah.
Is to give a view of the other side of the equation. If I can read and I plan to read a couple.
Yes, sir. Go ahead. It's your show.
Well, that's wonderful. Here's a quote from a newspaper article that was written sometime after the Battle of Chickamauga. Mm-hmm. And it kind of speaks to the average soldier. And anyway, it says, "The wounded are supported away on horseback. So is the limber man, whose placid face proves that he died very suddenly. Mm-hmm. After a while, a widow weeps somewhere, but the world never hears anything about it. It was only a skirmish up at the front, and so of lesser skirmishes where small scouting parties meet. Many of the nobler and braver spirits of this war have fallen thus, but no halo of glory brightens their names. They fell skirmishing at the front."
You know, that's amazing. It's not just in wartime, I guess it's in real life too, that the people, the generals and the top-ranking officers, their names are mentioned quite often in the major battles.
They have the halo of glory.
Right. Yes. But the ones who actually make it come true are the foot soldiers and the people that are on the front line and the ones that are supporting those people all the way down the line. And you can hear, just like when the fights were going on in World War II.
Oh, yeah.
And you hear about the great generals and the tactics they use. But if it wasn't for the soldiers that were making it actually happen and spilling their blood and spilling other people's bloods during that time, and all the heroic action is actually going on the battlefield.
Well, certainly, just being on the battlefield, I would think would be heroic enough, mm-hmm. which is again partly what I'm trying to do with this book. Mm-hmm. Again, the idea is to show that there was something else going on the war. I like to say, it may sound corny, but I like to say there's more to the Civil War than ever before.
Right,
and that's kind of what I'm trying to show in this book. Let's see if I can find something else to read here. Go to page 13. Let's see what we have here. I think this deals with Murfreesboro. Well, not
which was one of the major battles in the war.
Well, this isn't about the battle. I just did. And I can't find it, of course. Well, let me take a look. Another look in the index.
Well, you know, one of the things that is so that I have found to be true is that bullets did not cause all of the deaths and sickness that went on in this on the battlefields.
No, as a matter of fact, actually, it accounted for anywhere from 65 to 75% of all the deaths. That's even excluding battle wounds, mm-hmm. and you don't think of the smallpox hospitals or any other disease hospitals that were prevalent and used as killing people. Mm-hmm. And it did. The figure is astounding. Out of every 10, 7 died of disease, not ever seeing the battlefield.
That's amazing.
It is quite amazing. You're right. And it's a fact that gets obscured by the halo of glory surrounding the generals, and it doesn't tell us much about the common man.
But didn't we learn a lot from that war in probably a lot of issues that were brought up in the long run for the future from that, as far as where sickness came from, the diseases came from? On the battlefield, you had soldiers that had been killed and just laying there on the battlefield, and and the diseases ran rampant at that time.
Yes, they did.
And there were a number of physicians, I presume, on the battlefields at that time trying to deal with all the atrocities that were going on.
Well, certainly in a Civil War hospital would not be a place I'd like to be.
Right.
There were men called surgeons who were sort of like a step below a doctor, actually. And even that wasn't saying much.
Were they kind of like the medics would have been later?
Well,
I don't consider
the medics a step below a doctor. In any event, no, they didn't know about germs. I should say they knew about germs, but they didn't know their link to disease.
Mm-hmm.
And so they went ahead. Can you imagine having your leg sawed off without any anesthetic?
Unbelievable.
It was. And again, germs are funny things, I guess, but they're played a larger role. Little microbes played a larger role in the war than we might acknowledge.
It had to have been so horrific for all those soldiers out there fighting for, some of them probably didn't even know what cause they were fighting for at the time.
Well, I think
and
they
it,
knew.
And
I,
it was
I
all about glory and, you know, going out and doing something for whichever side they were fighting for.
Well,
and then they run into this just horrific mess.
It was a horrific mess, to be sure. There's other things that struck me at the time as being interesting. For example, in Memphis, in April of 1861, there's a newspaper report that says mass exodus reported in Memphis. It says a letter from Memphis dated on the 19th instant to a gentleman in St. Louis who communicates it to the Missouri Democrat says, "Yesterday over 2,000 persons left for the North. As many will leave this evening. This drain will be much felt in the coming conflict. I have no idea of leaving, but I will stick it out as long as possible. The one fact, is a volume of itself, and it is an argument that damps the cause of secession. Already is a bounty offered in the Southern for enlistments. Already are the traitors pressing men in service. Already are the peaceful inhabitants who get away, fleeing with their treasure and their families to the North." And this speaks to the kind of super patriotism that took place, was growing in Memphis and indeed throughout the state of Tennessee. And if you didn't like it, hit the road. And if you didn't hit the road, they would arrest you and sometimes whip you and sometimes shave your head, things of this nature too. Well, this is something you don't hear anything about.
Right.
But you will in this book. There's more of that. So it even happened here in Murfreesboro. You'd go to vote, for example, for or pro or against a secession.
Mm-hmm.
And before you'd vote, they'd put on your ballot your number on the book, the poll book.
Uh-huh.
And if your number was 65, they'd write the number 65 on it. And then if you voted for the Union instead of for secession, mm-hmm. they'd know who you were.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd take action against you, like beating you up or burning your house or chasing you out of the county or that kind of thing. So there's a super patriotism aspect that we don't think of. It's this blind patriotism. And these things are called committees of safety mm-hmm. or vigilante committees, I suppose.
Well, the hysteria, of course, was running rampant at that time because everyone's thoughts were so strong as to which side to be on. And the thing about it is, it happened on both sides. It ran rampant all the way through.
I understand there were such things in Boston, Massachusetts. Yes,
mm-hmm.
Although I don't think that's been too well documented.
Well, it's documented.
well, all I have to do is go to Boston, and you know the research that's involved in this is pretty difficult. You have to sit there looking through microfilm and mm-hmm. a lot of it,
mm-hmm.
and I mean a lot of it, and you have to spin that microfilm roll and wait until you find something that interests you and you can see has some bearing on the situation.
Well, now your book is called?
It's
what?
Called Tennessee in the Civil War, Selected Contemporary Accounts of Military and Other Events, Month by Month.
Now that had to take a great deal of research.
Oh, actually, it sure did. It took me, I guess, all told, not straight days of work, but it took me 11 years to get all this stuff together, mm-hmm. and I have more even. Actually, you could get on the internet at www.TennesseeCivilWarSourcebook.com, and you'll find the Tennessee Civil War source book. Mm-hmm. And you can search for just about anything, just going to the appropriate box and typing it in and clicking the go button, and you will find what you want. I recommend that. That's the thing that took more time than this book. In fact, this book is kind of drawn from that site.
Why did you center on the Civil War as it related to Tennessee, the state?
Well, it seemed to me, I started off wondering how many fights took place.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked a very dear friend of mine, Fred Prouty, mm-hmm. who's very much involved with the Civil War, Sesquicentennial. And he told me that this is back in the 90s. And he gave a number to me. And I said, well, that's pretty good. But being a historian, I said, well, I better check and see. Where did this number come from?
Mm-hmm.
So he gave me a couple sources, very respected sources. And I looked at the number that they gave, and I came up with the question, where did they get the number?
Mm-hmm.
How did they get this number?
Right.
Who did they count them? Where did they get them from?
Mm-hmm.
So I went to what's called the Official Records of the War of the Rebellion,
mm-hmm.
otherwise known to historians and many others as the OR. And I went through the index. It's a double volume index, about, I guess together maybe 1,500 pages.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked for everything that had to do with Tennessee and battles and skirmishes and engagements and actions. And we'll talk about that in a minute. And I came up with that, and I started looking at another document called Dyer's Index to the Civil War,
mm-hmm.
and found that, which was done a little bit after the official records, and I found some things wanting. For example, Dyer's never talks about in his lists who these Confederates were fighting.
Mm-hmm.
He just talked about the Yankees who fought them.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of think that he was a little prejudiced in that regard. In any event, so I continued through that and through other sources, mm-hmm. and found references to battles, usually skirmishes, that were not put in the official records. And I came up with a different number altogether after all that. Let me see. I have it here, would you believe, in this book. let's see. The list composed by the author shows that skirmishes numbering 1,225 accounted for 39% of the total combat events, while battles account for 0.04%. We're talking about the big battles.
Right.
0.04% of the total of combat events in the Civil War in the Tennessee.
Now, was Stones River
a big battle?
A big battle.
Oh, yes. Yes. That they may give you protection and security. If you fail to respond to this appeal, I'll be compelled by the sternest convictions of duty, charged as I am with the responsibility of seeing that the state is defended, to disband these regiments of brave soldiers and call you who have arms into service as militia. I earnestly entreat to the people that the people will bring forward every effective double-barrel shotgun and sporting rifle which they have to be immediately shipped to the arsenal at Nashville, Knoxville, or Memphis, where the same will be valued and the value paid to the owner by the Confederate government. I urge you to give me your aid in the important work of arming our troops. That just goes to show you that they just didn't have enough guns.
Right.
And so the governor had to say, look, if you don't give us your guns, we're going to disband these volunteer units and we're going to draft. And this is pretty serious.
Yeah.
Well, you don't hear about this.
Yeah.
Except
certainly didn't have any assault rifles, did they?
No.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Dr. Jim Jones.
Registration for the second annual Special Kids Race presented by MMC is now open. With a sold-out first-year event, mark your calendar for Saturday, March 23rd, 2013, and choose from one of three distances, the 1-mile fun run, the 5K, or the 15K. Registration is limited to 3,000 participants, so don't miss out on one of Murfreesboro's biggest races. With your help, Special Kids can reach even more children with special needs. Register today at specialkidsrace.org and run for the kids.
We're talking with this area's only certified physician in heart CT, Dr. Rishi Saxena. Before you have a stress test or heart catheterization, consider the 64-slice CT scan.
We could find the same information without taking too much risk.
It only takes minutes, there are no needles, and it could show things other tests miss.
You could act on it and prevent heart attack and death from happening.
No referral is necessary for the 64-slice CT scan. Call 896-4800 and make an appointment with Dr. Rishi Saxena.
Hi, I'm Pastor Mike Norris of Franklin Road Baptist Church. So, what are you looking for in a church? I believe the church is a critical part of life for anyone who wants to grow their personal walk with the Lord Jesus Christ. The church is a place where we can open God's Word together and gain insight into how He wants us to live our lives and how He wants us to minister to those around us. It's where we can find biblical direction that will help us meet the challenges we face in today's life. It also serves as a place where we can draw strength and encouragement from other believers. But most importantly, it is a place where people can find God's purpose and plan for their lives. Here at Franklin Road Baptist Church, we want to help.
At frbc.com, Franklin Road Baptist Church. Down the street from Kaysen Lane on Highway 96, which is also known as Franklin Road in Murfreesboro.
Hi, this is Peter Demas, and I'm inviting you to come eat with our family at Demas's restaurant. When they get under the weather, everybody likes to take that soup. We actually sell enough soup over the year that can fill up an Olympic-sized swimming pool. You can get it by cup, bowl, gallon, whatever size you want to get it in, and it's also one of those things you can freeze and ship. The chicken soup is wonderful if you have a cold. If I'm feeling sick, I'll just put it in a little coffee cup and I sip it while I'm doing my work. Come to our Demas's restaurant in Murfreesboro, which is located on 1115 Northwest Broad Street.
And WGNS with breaking news this morning, just to let you know that we have some updated information on our WGNS Snow Patrol. Oakland at Blackman will be played tonight. Basketball will be played. You know, there's this deal, if you're out of school, you have to get special permission and such. Well, the roads are going to be clear enough for them to be able to play that game this evening. So we will have the broadcast, Oakland at Blackman this evening. Smyrna at Laverne will be played as well. It's a game-by-game determination now, and we are working to find out any further information that we can. But we can tell you that the Smyrna-Laverne game will be played as well as Oakland-Blackman. So we'll have these updated on our website, by the way, WGNSradio.com, to let you know. But our broadcast game tonight will hit the airwaves at 5:45 for State Farm Prep Basketball, Oakland at Blackman. What about the weather forecast? A cool 19 degrees right now.
WeatherEye.
Well, plenty of sunshine for the forecast area with a high in the upper 20s and a northwest wind between 5 and 10. Tonight, increasing cloud cover and a low of 23. I'm WGNS staff meteorologist Mandy Feluber. Right now, it's 19.
Don Parker is our WGNS birthday cake winner, receiving the birthday cake from Junior's Foodland. And want to say congratulations to Michelle Davey. She receives the flowers from Ryan's Flower Shop for being our good neighbor of the day. Her sister told us that she's been a shining example of a good sister. So congratulations, Michelle. Enjoy the flowers from Ryan's Flowers and Gifts.
You had an accident and the guy's bloodthirsty lawyer wants to sue you. How would you protect yourself? Affordable liability insurance from Safe Auto. For not a lot of money, you can protect yourself from your own mistakes. Call 1-800-SAFE-AUTO now. Drive safe, spend less, Safe Auto.
Financial Coaching Radio with fee-only certified financial planner Jason Qualls, where cookie-cutter financial advice just doesn't cut it. Weekdays at 1 here on WGNS.
I've got
AmeriCare Services Incorporated, family-owned and operated for residential and commercial customers, we offer a full range of services. Our services include one-time, monthly, and quarterly pest control, termite control, moisture and fungus control, automatic foundation vents, and more. Licensed, insured, and bonded for your protection. 893-7111.
Call the best of the best to get rid of your pest.
AmeriCare Services Incorporated.
Now more of The Truman Show with Truman Jones on WGNS AM and FM.
And welcome back with Dr. Jim Jones. Jim is better than James, isn't it?
Well, sure, I think so. Although, to some people, it has that connotation in South America, but it's not the same guy. It's not me.
I am so happy. And we want to let you know this part of his show is brought to you by Charlie Pitts Hair Styling on Las Casas Pike, where they provide quality haircut styling for men, women, and children. And you can call 895-3997. That's 895-3997 for Charlie Pitts Hair Styling. And it's not just a haircut. I mean, it's as good a haircut as you'll get in Hollywood or anywhere else. And it's an experience every time you go in there. Now, we're talking about the Civil War.
Yes, sir.
And the thing that interests me is more was actually going on in Tennessee than any other place. When we're talking about battlefields from east all the way to west,
right,
the whole state was a battlefield.
That's correct. It probably has to do with geography. The major strategy of the North was called the Anaconda policy. Mm-hmm. And that was, sort of like a snake, the Anaconda,
right,
to grab a hold of and strangle the Confederacy, mm-hmm, to keep supplies out of it. But that didn't work. The Navy, of course, blockaded all the ports of the South, and that helped a whole lot to constrict the flow of goods.
Right.
And at the same time, the armies had to gain territory and defeat the Confederate armies. This wasn't as easy as some may have thought, but Tennessee was geographically located, perfectly located, to if you could take Tennessee, you could go into the lower southern states from Tennessee as a base. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why Tennessee was so important. And there's Fort Donelson, Fort Henry too, Shiloh, Murfreesboro, the Battle of Memphis, Knoxville, Chattanooga, among others. And these were large battles that helped determine that the Union would hold on to Tennessee. And the idea, again, was to make sure that Tennessee could serve as a base of Fortress Rosecrans. 23 miles of earthen walls, mm-hmm, was a depot for the movement of war material and some soldiers southward. And it would work perfectly. So I think the reason Tennessee had such a great many battles and skirmishes and whatnot is because of its geographic location.
Well, now, how important were the rivers and the waterways as they ran from north to south? Because that had to have been an important way to move equipment, especially heavy equipment.
They were critically important, and the South tried sometimes to, for example, to put up a chain across the Mississippi that would stop Union boats going south. It didn't work, however. It was one of those grand designs about General Gideon Pillow, who was a character to say the least. Along with the waterways were the railroads, the Louisville and Nashville, the Chattanooga and Nashville, to be the prime arteries of moving goods. Then later was built from Port Johnson City to Nashville, the North by Northwest Railroad. These kinds of communications and the rivers, of course, helped a great deal in moving men and materiel that helped, again, Tennessee hold on. I mean, the Union hold on to Tennessee as a base for further operations.
Did the South have allies in the northern part of the country?
They did.
That had an ability to make firearms and equipment and to ship it down. And you look at the waterways that come inland, but there were also waterways that would go along the eastern side in the Atlantic, that there were a number of ports down there. Were those utilized at all?
Well, you may have heard of the blockade runners, southern ships, mm-hmm, that would make it past the Union blockade, going out and coming back in. And they would smuggle, essentially, mm-hmm, materials of war, guns and cotton. Well, they didn't really need cotton. They had enough of it themselves. And gunpowder and foodstuffs, and even some luxury goods, but that wasn't enough to keep the ball rolling for the South.
South really didn't have the factories that they needed.
No, they didn't. No, nowhere near the factories. No, they didn't have the guns, as I just mentioned. If they didn't have the guns, they didn't have the factories to make the guns. There was a small little gun shop started here in Murfreesboro soon after secession. could put out about 8 guns a day. Uh-huh. And that's not saying much, is it, for the needs of some 100,000 men.
So that we were basically, the South was a nation at that time that was pretty much, yes, and it was underfunded, didn't have the factories that were needed to mobilize that type of effort into the military.
I always like to think that the South had the spirit. They just didn't have the goods. And you can't win a war on spirit alone.
Now,
and that's I think, to my mind, that's the long and short of it.
Well, you had the center of the Confederacy was actually not in Tennessee.
It was the base for which the Union Army could continue its fighting.
So that's why it was so devastated during all that time.
Sure, to keep Tennessee in Union hands, and it wasn't easy because once your army had established control over the means of transportation. You still had resistance, usually in the form of guerrilla raids or many kinds of skirmishes throughout the war.
Now, was there a plan at all that, since you have researched all this, that the Union had for the South as far as it rebuilding, because there wasn't much effort put into the South for reconstruction. In especially in the devastated areas like in Tennessee. I know that probably in lower Mississippi and Alabama and Texas and places like that, they did not have the devastation. So it's my understanding that probably the families in those areas did not have the overwhelming problem that they had here in Tennessee of reconstructing their homes, their lives again.
After the war.
After the war. It had to been. I just wondered if there were any forethought at all, or were we just the victims of the people who came down into this area after the war?
We may have been the victims of our own rhetoric,
right.
Our own belief, our own spirit. Because again, spirit won't win a war. It's definitely, morale is definitely a large part of the picture, but without the goods, without the rifles, without the cannons, without the gunpowder, without the food, without the uniforms, you're going to have a hard time winning. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happened.
But then to try to build your lives back after the war, I think that you had to have a vow or make an oath back to the Union, or you received little or absolutely no help, or maybe even the carpetbaggers came down.
Well, that happened a lot during the war as well. People would be asked to take, in the cities primarily, would be asked to take the oath of allegiance to the United States, and some diehards said, no, never, never. And then when they came up with a policy that if you don't take the oath and swear to the Union, we're going to send you south where you really want to be, to the Confederacy. And all of a sudden, the number of people who took the oath skyrocketed. So I don't know if they meant it or not. They just didn't want to go south where the trouble was.
Why was it, and I know there's a lot of issues that have been brought up, and a lot of them are emotional or whatever, but why was the South at that time considered kind of like a stepchild? They were not given the tools, the factories, all of the things, all of those were still up north, or most of them were, and all of the goods were being shipped from south to north.
Well, the raw material, cotton, was sent to the mills in New England, where cloth, different kinds of cloth, were made. And as you can imagine, it was cloth for gold, cloth for gold. And cloth comes from cotton, which comes from cotton plantations, which means slave labor. And the North didn't have slave labor, although some people would say they had wage slaves, but they had free labor. And the South had slave labor. And it was also, of course, as it came to be, a racial issue, certainly after the war, and indeed during the war, when the black troops were sent into battle and made into regular units, the USCT, or U.S. Colored Troops. But yes, the North had the factories. The South didn't. It was two different economic systems. The North was capitalistic. The South was just pre-capitalistic. but the South provided the means for the cotton, provided the cotton for the mills in the North. And you'll see it if you look at a railroad map. There are so few railroads in the South, and in the North they almost blacken the entire landscape.
Mm-hmm.
So that's essentially it. There was a pre-capitalist society in the South and a capitalist society, a very strong one, in the North. And if you ask, well, who won the Civil War, you could say capitalism won the Civil War,
mm-hmm.
not pre-capitalism.
Well, wasn't the Union at the time, they were capitalizing off of the slave labor actually more than the South was.
I don't know about more, but certainly they certainly made a great deal more of the raw material which was sent up north.
Well, they couldn't have been very competitive without that in the South.
That's true. And that's, again, the pre-capitalist idea here. They could have, and did it to a small extent. They could have had their own cotton factories, to produce the cloths and whatnot out of cotton, but they didn't, because they were steeped in this tradition of, I hate to keep saying, getting back to it, but slave labor.
Yeah.
It was impossible for them to make the jump without giving up slavery.
Now, there were not that many jobs and opportunities in the South at that time anyway.
Not for what were called mechanics or working men.
Was slave labor always black? In some ways, you look at the white labor back then. There were a lot of poor whites in that time who depended upon basically farming or those type things.
I don't know if you'd want to call a free farmer who had no slaves a slave. I think slavery was definitely a system based in law,
mm-hmm.
and everything was in about slavery was defined by law. And if you were a free man, it was also defined by law, but you were a free man nevertheless.
Mm-hmm.
A slave could not marry, for example. A slave could not question his master's dictations, and on it goes. But, I mean, if you think about being a slave, I mean, if you just think about that, what does that really mean?
Yeah.
It means you have no freedom.
Right.
And so, while you might say that the white workers in the factories up north were wage slaves because they couldn't get any other job, and they had to work for these low-paying jobs because the capitalists had the jobs sewn up in their factories. They were job providers, I suppose you could say. That you could call them wage slaves, but still they were free.
But it seemed like the North was dictating that capitalistic attitude. You think of the large, wealthy landowners in the South, and then you compare them to the wealthy factory owners in the North, and there's not a whole lot of difference there, is it? The way things were going at that time.
No, I don't think so. In the South, however, you might be astonished to learn that out of every 10 white farmers,
mm-hmm.
Only 25% owned slaves. The other 75% owned zero, no, none slaves. Not at all, not one. It's a basic question. How would these people whose economics were ruled by their own work, mm-hmm. how would they be allowed, how would they think it was in their interest to fight for the slave owners, especially mm-hmm. the plantation owners, the big plantation owners? We think of places like Oakland or up north where I work, Clover Bottom, as being typical of the South, and they mm-hmm. were not. They were atypical. They weren't even perhaps maybe 2% of the entire Southern landowners, farmers, these big plantation owners. And in fact, those who did, out of that 25% who owned slaves, they owned, most of them owned anywhere from 1 to 10 slaves and no more. Maybe the ideal was to get slaves and progress, but only 25% of the white population, male heads of household, owned slaves. The other 75% were free white farmers, yeoman farmers, they were called.
So the war was basically over economics when you get right down to it.
Well, there's the issue of slavery.
There's the issue of slavery, but it seems like the bigger issue has been economics over the time. So the question then we get right back to, why did that 75% plus people, what were they fighting for at that time?
That's a question that has puzzled many and puzzles me still. I don't know. I do not hasten to bid an idea. It could be because of propaganda. It could be because of could be because of racism in the South. Right. Although the North didn't have a great record on that either. But you didn't go to war if you were from the Union. Let's go to war for capitalism. They didn't say that. They didn't even think that. But they went to war to preserve the Union. And in the South, they went to war to protect their homes and their families. Mm-hmm. That was the basic difference in the attitudes of the northern and southern soldier. But again, this capitalistic versus pre-capitalistic struggle is one that I think is so basic that people don't understand it, that it had something to do with the war. Mm-hmm. And yes, it may have been ultimately the primary cause of the war. Why would they want to secede anyway? Mm-hmm. They said it was for states' rights, but I still don't think it was that. They weren't even thinking, that we're a pre-capitalist society and they're a capitalist society.
Right.
But as historians have studied, they seem to think that that's probably what was going on. And who won? Well, the capitalistic society won. Mm-hmm. We are a capitalistic society today.
Yes.
It took a long time for the South to pull itself up from the devastation that the Yankee armies brought. Mm-hmm. But they did, in the end, do so.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Dr. Jim Jones.
Do your part to help the environment when you shop Haynes Chevalier Hardware. This is Rich Schmidt with more winter savings from Haynes Chevalier Hardware. Come in today for a 5-pack of 13-watt spiral compact fluorescent bulbs. They're only $9.99 while supplies last. These general-purpose bulbs replace 60-watt bulbs and last up to 8,000 hours. And they deliver comfortable lighting in an ultra-mini size. $9.99 while supplies last. So hurry in and stock up on this bargain of the month at Haynes Chevalier Hardware. Start right, start here. Haynes Chevalier Hardware on Memorial behind Reeves Haynes Drugstore.
The Outpost Armory is not just another gun store. Our staff has hands-on knowledge and experience with firearms, self-defense training, hunting, and competitive shooting. We cater to the new gun owner and the expert looking for that hard-to-find product. We carry items that the big chain stores don't and have bulk ammunition for the high-volume shooter. We defend the Second Amendment and help responsible citizens protect their families, rights, and liberties. Visit us in person or online at theoutpostarmory.com. The Outpost Armory, I-24 East at Exit 89 in Murfreesboro.
At Butts Tire Pros, everything rotates around you. It starts with a hassle-free experience where you're welcomed by the business owners, Bud and Kay Mitchell, and you're never sold anything you don't need. With hundreds of tires available from all major brands like Michelin and BF Goodrich, your tire investment is covered by the nation's best warranty package featuring roadside assistance. For local service you can trust without the hassle, visit Bud's Tire Pros, located in Murfreesboro, or call 896-TIRE. That's 896-8473.
Slick Pig Barbecue. Down on East Main, there's pork, beef, chicken, and wings. Sauce too good to be true.
Now at Slick Pig Barbecue, try the Catfish Special. Wednesday night between 4 and 8 o'clock. $9.99 plus tax for all-you-can-eat catfish. The meal includes hush puppies, white beans, and homemade coleslaw.
Slick Pig Barbecue, 1920 East Main.
To bag the deer of a lifetime, you have to be prepared. That's why you need to shop Murfreesboro Outdoors.
This is Randy at Murfreesboro Outdoors. We get camouflage clothes, shotguns, shells.
Murfreesboro Outdoors on Northwest Broad Street.
You've known him for years. Now you can visit with him every day. It's The Truman Show, continuing right now on WGNS, AM and FM.
And welcome back with Dr. Jim Jones. And one thing, you were talking earlier about the South was all volunteer. They were up there wanted to protect their area.
They were all volunteer for a while. And after a while, there were draft riots in Nashville. I mean, young men did not want to be drafted into the Southern Army. They wanted, that doesn't mean they didn't want to fight. They wanted to be volunteers.
Right.
It was considered a mark of disgrace to be drafted.
Yeah, that's terrible. But then you look in the North, and a lot of that was going on in the North, and they were not only taking people that were citizens in this country, as new ones would come into New York and places like that, they were automatically drafted and sent out because you were able to buy your way out of being drafted.
Exactly. And there's a lot of that in the South as well. Buying a substitute, or
right,
paying for a substitute, it was called. And yes, you may have seen the movie The Gangs of New York, and there was people getting off the boat, and immediately Germans and Irishmen were signed up for the Union Army. Yeah. There were some units in the Union Army that spoke nothing but German.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
But, you know, you think back at that time, the Irish, bless their hearts, which a lot of us down here have Irish blood in them.
Me included.
They were one of the more malign groups of people that have come into this country, and they basically fought their way to the top, didn't they?
I would say so, yes. They certainly did. As I think that's probably true of all immigrant groups to the United States.
So we were a land of opportunity, but there were pitfalls in there, weren't there?
You had to grab it and work hard. Exactly right.
But you know, that's what's made this country strong, isn't it?
You'll get no argument from me.
With all the hills that you've had to climb when you come into this country, there's always a big shining light waiting for you when you get to the top. It's just a struggle for everybody, and everybody has to use their particular aptitudes to make themselves successful. And we're all given gifts. I mean, that's what most people don't understand. Everybody in this country is given a gift, and they can actually put something forward in a positive way for not only themselves, but also the country, the county, the city they live in.
That's right, and you'll get no argument from me.
Well, we've come down to a final word. Is there anything in particular you wanted to say to anybody? I know you got Cindy coming on, wife coming on Monday
She'll
morning.
She'll give a good show for you.
Yeah, she will. Do you want to tell her how tough it is up here?
If you're listening, hon, it's a hot seat.
it's the easiest thing you've done in a long time. And I want to thank you for writing that book, because we need more of that to really let people know how things really were going on during that particular time.
I'd like to say again that folks might want to, well, buy this book, of course. You can get it, order it in any bookstore, but go to www.TennesseeCivilWarSourcebook, that's one word, .com, and check it out. It's the site is hosted by the Tennessee State Library and Archives, and it's a really good site for information about the Civil War.
And that's Tennessee in the Civil War.
Tennessee Civil War Sourcebook, and my book is Tennessee in the Civil War.
And it's a book you're going to have to read. You need to pick it up.
I think you need to pick it up, yeah.
And Dr. Jim Jones, and he's not prejudiced at all. It's probably one of the best books ever written about the Civil War.
Well, all right. I'll go by that.
He'll go with that. All right. We'll see you guys Monday morning at 9, and we'll see the other side of the Jones family then.
All
we'll have Miss Cindy Jones.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
A suicide bombing is raising fresh concerns about U.S. Embassy